On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Hey, welcome to the program. No theme music today. This is kind of a special. We call this an interview special. I do a lot of interviews on this program. Sometimes I'll do two or three a day, but you only hear one of them on a particular day. So sometimes you get into a situation where there are some interviews that you didn't hear. So that's what we're doing today, just interviews, simply interviews. There's four or five of them in a row. Sometimes they're informative, sometimes they're entertaining. I don't know. You be the judge. Hi, Bridget.
Hello, Ron.
Hi.
Good morning, Ron.
Good morning. Bridget Thito joins us now. She's CEO of Family Self-Care. Pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you, Ron.
You're welcome. This is a little bit different than what we're used to. We're used to doing the healthcare thing. You find out information, you go to your doctor, and you go home. This is a little bit different. This is about how to take care of your daily healthcare issues in a different way, I understand.
And that's it. Exactly the case. I mean, do you want me to go and explain a bit what we're doing, Ron?
Yeah, I understand. This is an app that you can get on your phone?
Yes, that's right. That's an app that's called Self-Care One.
Okay, tell me about this.
So Self-Care One is an app that is free, that you can have on a mobile phone.
Uh-huh.
And if you refer to essential oils and health, what we want to do is to facilitate the use of essential oils. We want to make it more simply. We want to help people to have reduced costs and more efficacy with the use of essential oils on an everyday basis. So what we want is to help everybody to be able to use natural health solutions, and we're starting with helping them using essential oils on an everyday basis.
Okay. Now, this essential oils can actually make you feel better and fresher. And there are a lot of categories what essential oils can do for you. I'll run through some of them: sleep disorders, stress, concentrating more with your mind, skin care issues, I mean, immune system. The list goes on and on.
Yes, that's exactly one. The point with essential oils is that when you go on the web and you look at what essential oils can do and help on,
yeah,
you discover there are many, many ways to use essential oils. There are many oils. It's pretty complex. It can cover many everyday issues. And the oils have been proved in mm-hmm. clinical trials, so it's really performing. But most of us don't really know how to use them. And the scope, we don't really know the scope of what they can do. That's exactly what we want to do with our app. Yes, we want to make it more accessible to everybody, so that everybody with a few oils can use, can cover many kind of everyday health issues.
Yes. Now, I don't know. I'm a guy. I don't know if you know that. And
I noticed.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. And I thought essential oils were something that you put in one of those evaporator machines, and then it makes the room smell like lavender. Boy, am I wrong. I mean, these can be applied directly to the skin. They can be swallowed internally in some cases. I did not know all of that.
Yes, and Ron, you are a representative of a big chunk of the American population.
Oh, that's me.
And it's we made a research and we interviewed 600 Americans, and we understood that the majority of men didn't really know about all the applications that can be used with essential oils. And on top of that, we learned that they are the most interested in using essential oils when they knew about how to use it. So, yes, essential oils can be used by inhalation, by topical application, and ingestion. And we are covering another use of essential oils as compared to the diffusers when you have them on air, the room a bit more purified, the air but purified, or have nice scents. So it's a totally different usage, and it's more for everyday health, and it's not just aromatherapy, it's also something, for example, essential oils can enter into your body in 30 seconds. It goes around, you know, I'm French speaking, so my English will not be as good as yours.
That's wonderful.
To explain that what you apply essential oils on your skin, it goes into your blood circulation in 30 seconds. It makes the round of it.
Oh, what fast.
So it's really efficient.
Yeah.
It's really efficient. And in 20 minutes, it could go directly to the organ where I have an issue. That's what is really clever with essential oils. And it's not me, Brigitte, people speaking about that.
Yeah.
I mean, there are many scientists who talk about it. But what is really interesting with them is that they go directly to the source of an issue. If you have an organ, for example, you have a chest issue, you put essential oils on your chest, it will go where there is a pain. That's the beauty of it.
So the app helps you discern and discover which oils would help which concerns, how they would best be effective. That's what the app does.
Yes, exactly. I mean, if you look at the app, you can see the list of issues. So you can say, okay, what is the issue with me? And the app will work based on your profile. I don't know if you noticed, but I could ask some information so that if you are a pregnant woman, you will not have the same formulation as a child of 7 years old and you. So the app will tell you exactly which oil to use, how to use it, when to use it, remind you when to use it, what is very important to us. To mention, from the fact that it is easy to use, intuitive, it is safe, that's very important, and it makes it easy to use on a regular basis, because, thanks to the reminder. But what I wanted to mention that it's less for more, because what we wanted to provide as much as combination as possible with a few oils.
Yes.
One of the biggest issues is you run when you want to use essential oils.
Yes.
You will go on the web and you will see, you could use a lavender or you could use this oil. And at the end of the day, which oil should I ask?
Uh-huh.
Which oil should I buy? Should I buy 10 oils, 20 oils? And our algorithm is based on 9 oils, 8 essential oils, and just one vegetable oil that you can choose if you want. You can use olive oil if you want.
Yes.
And the idea is to make as many as solution with just the best 8 oils.
Got you.
So that people stop having to choose, to buy, to stock many oils at home.
Yes, you don't want to have oils all over the place. You want the ones that just appeal to you and work for you and the fewest amount that do the most. So the app is like having a coach with you at all times, I guess.
Exactly.
All right. I can work for your company, you know, if you'd like. All right.
With pleasure. I mean, you know, we're recruiting a lot of people. We should be 22 people next year. So I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Okay. This company, by the way, this app is rather new. It's about 2 years old. Is that right?
No. We developed our activities. We started our activities 2 years ago, and it took us 2 years to develop this, because we are not just developing an application, but we are also developing a dispenser.
Okay.
Because, you know, with the application, you know what to use, when to use, how to use, but you still have to buy the oils and to mix the oils and to count the drops that the application is giving you. We are working on a dispenser as well.
Bridget, the biggest question and the biggest concern you alluded to a little bit earlier in the conversation, it's the safety of it. That's what most people are concerned about. Once they're cleared and they know it's safe, then they can freely go about solving their problems. But it is totally safe. Is that right?
Yes. What is safe is that we build the algorithm on publication, yes. Scientific publication in collaboration with a pharmacist uh-huh. and a doctor, yeah. general practitioner, so that they could validate that the algorithm is nothing else than what is the publication, scientific publication and that work.
Okay.
Also, what we decided is that the application, you can use it with your with different profiles. You can have the profile of your children and whatever. And we will not, in the algorithm, we use the best dilutions for children, for example.
Yeah.
If you want to use this product for your children,
yeah.
you in general, you should not have more than XY percentage of dilution
right.
in a vegetable
right.
or in a carrier oil.
Sure.
So we use the biggest, highest dilution rate to ensure
yeah.
it's the minimum and it's
right.
it's safest.
Well, yeah, it's like aspirin. You know, aspirin may relieve a little headache, but you don't take 2,000 milligrams of it. So you know, you got to know how much to take. And you're backed by Johnson & Johnson, I understand.
Well, we are incubated at the J Labs Innovation Incubator in New York, and yes. We are based there, and we have worked with them on some aspects that I cannot talk about. But it's more on the. For example, with them we have done some research that led us to the conclusion that 57% of the men in the U.S.
Yeah.
would love to use Self-Care One. So.
Okay.
57% of right. men want to use it. So
okay.
Very great.
Very good. How do we get more information about this? Where we can find the app? I guess in the download Play Store we can find it, right?
Yes, you can download it on the iOS and Android,
right.
So App Store and the Play Store.
So what do I search? Family self-care?
No, you search Self-Care One. OSS.
Self-Care One. Self-Care One. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
That's what we look for, yeah. Self-Care One. Perfect. Well, congratulations to you.
Thank you very much.
All right. It's great speaking with you, Bridget.
Thank you. Bye-bye, Hon.
Bye-bye.
I'm looking forward to,
yes.
to work with you back.
Hey, you never know.
Hi, Ron.
Hello, Ron.
Hello, everybody. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you very much. We have some guests here. We have a doctor who's a breast surgeon at Ohio Health Breast and Cancer Services, and we also have a breast cancer patient advocate. I will not be able to pronounce your name, so I don't want to get it wrong. So, doctor, I'll ask you to introduce yourself.
Yes, hi. My name is Deepa Halaharvi.
Okay. And our other guest.
my name is Jennifer Mershdorf.
Okay. I'm Ron. Hi. Okay.
I'm Ron.
Okay. Hi, Ron.
See, I can pronounce Ron real easily. Okay. All right. We're talking about something that I guess I'm a little happy to hear in a otherwise not wonderful subject matter, but breast cancer has really given us more options for treatment than we've ever had before. Am I right in assuming that, doctor?
Yes, absolutely. You know, breast cancer affects 1 in 8 women, and early stage breast cancer is something that's the most common kind of breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And so in the several decades, we've treated breast cancer in a combination of surgery, chemotherapy, radiation, anti-estrogen pills, and then targeted therapy. In the last decade, there's this genomic test called Oncotype DX that looks at the biology of the tumor, and it gives a personalized score which tells the women whether chemotherapy is beneficial or not. So this is really huge in the breast cancer world and has made a significant impact in how we treat early-stage breast cancer patients.
Okay. Now, as an example, my mother passed from breast cancer quite a while ago. There were not any.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, there weren't many options for her, as I remember going through the process with her at all, and it was just a matter of just making a spin on her life expectancy. But now and that was quite some time ago. Now it's like totally different.
Oh, it absolutely totally different. Just my case, I was diagnosed after I started working as a breast surgeon 8 months after at age 41.
Oh.
And if I was diagnosed 10 years ago, I would have probably gotten chemotherapy. But thanks to the Oncotype DX, my oncologist ordered it. And the score, I discussed the score with my oncologist, and not getting chemotherapy was the best option for me.
Yeah.
But had I been diagnosed 10 years earlier, I probably would be getting the chemotherapy that was not really beneficial for me.
Okay.
For my kind of cancer. So that's why I'm here. I'm very passionate about this test. I want to make sure women across the country hear about this and ask their physician for the test.
Jennifer, what's your story? What's going on there with you?
I was diagnosed with breast cancer at age 36 and 9 years ago. And actually, it was about 9 months after my mother was diagnosed.
There you go.
It's appropriate to mention that because we're talking about age.
Yeah.
And she was 30 years older than I, and we had very different treatments, very different journeys.
Yeah.
Being a young adult with breast cancer is different than being an older woman with breast cancer.
Yeah. I can imagine that. How do you overcome the psychology of it? I'll ask both of you, because it's not just a physical dilemma. It is a psychological dilemma as well, and I guess that can actually have physical ramifications.
Sure. I think Young Survival Coalition, YSC, it's an organization that we focus a lot on ensuring that young adults facing the disease find community and find each other, and that has a lot to do with the impacts. You're not alone. Although you might feel like it when you're young, facing cancer. But it's important to know that you're not. And it's important to make sure that you're getting information that is directly relates to you, which is part of the reason YSC is partnering with Genomic Health to make sure that that all young breast cancer survivors know about what the Oncotype DX and just asking the questions and talking to their doctor and partnering.
Yeah. I guess the bottom line to all this, is to avoid it. And if it comes about, it's to detect it as early as possible. And I'm sure you recommend various intervals in which you do so.
Yeah, that is absolutely right. So we recommend getting mammograms at age 40.
Uh-huh.
And unless you have family history of breast cancer, if you have family history, then you would get it 10 years earlier than age 40.
Yeah.
And in terms of the psychological trauma, I was used to telling my patients, you have breast cancer, but I found myself in my patient's shoes, with newly diagnosed breast cancer. And, you go through all the same emotions of denial and anger and bargaining, depression and acceptance. And honestly, I'll tell you, this has made me a better physician and a better surgeon, because I can truly understand what it feels like to be told that you have breast cancer.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely helps. Someone who's empathetic to the situation. Many seniors now may not be familiar with how their parents actually passed, because it was not discussed in prior generation what your conditions were. And I know that sounds a little archaic, but it's actually the case I've found.
I I think that is probably true. You know, I oftentimes I ask my patients the family history and figure out, you know, why the parents passed away, you know, what was the cause. And oftentimes they don't know. And, you know, cancer was such a taboo back in the day. But anymore it's not. You know, anymore we talk about it. And like Jennifer alluded to earlier, you know, we are a big community. We want to help each other, and Young Survivor Coalition does that. Yeah. And for a woman, when you get diagnosed with breast cancer, you want to find that community for you, your family, your support group, your support network. And I think that's really important. That's what gets you through this diagnosis.
Yeah. I'll ask the both of you, are specialists the same all over the country, or would their methods differ? Would their testing differ? What should we ask for?
Yeah, so I will say, you know, this is a test that's part of the national guidelines across worldwide.
All right.
So this is a part of the treatment plan and standard of care. So it would be not standard of care if your doctor is not ordering it for you, regardless of your age.
All right.
And so you should absolutely be educated about this test. Ask your doctor if you're diagnosed with hormone receptor positive early stage breast cancer.
Okay. And we're talking about a cone of being treated. So get it early, get it detected early if that's the case. And then treatment becomes a lot more successful, certainly.
That is correct.
Yeah. I think people, if they're interested to learn more, they can go to the nomattermyage.org website,
right,
and learn more about the campaign.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time today. I think this particular subject matter actually touches everybody in one way or another. So it's a vital conversation. One more time, that website, please.
Nomattermyage.org.
Okay. No matter my age. I can, you know, I can remember that because I say that to myself all the time. And, and men, you have to get tested for things, too. You can get cancers in places that are very typical as well. So you get on the ball as well. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Ron.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Hello, good morning.
Hi, Francis. How are you?
I'm well. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic. Francis J. Masano, did I pronounce your last name properly?
You did. Thank you.
Hey. She's the senior managing partner, New Schools Venture Fund, and we're talking about Latino entrepreneurs in education. Tell me a little bit about where that stands. I think there's a funding problem there.
Yes, that's right. So as you can imagine, one in four Latino public school students, one in four students today in public schools across the country identify as Latino.
Right.
And so one of the things that we are really focused on at New Schools is the fact that we want to see more talent in education, whether you're talking about teachers, principals, school administrators, really represent the background of Latino students. And so as an organization that funds entrepreneurs and teams of educators who are looking to reimagine education, we wanted to see that across all our funding areas that there were more Latinos applying for grants from us. And one of the most striking things we saw the last couple of years is that only 8 to 18% of the people applying for funding from us actually shared the background of those public school students that I was talking about. And so we're finding that both us at New Schools and many of the philanthropic partners that we have in the field are not really supporting Latino leaders. They weren't really showing up in our pipelines. And so it was a big issue that we wanted to learn more about.
Do Latino entrepreneurs know that this help and this support is available to them?
You know, that was another finding from the report that we're releasing, that there was low familiarity with philanthropy overall. And so what that meant was that only about 30% of the people we surveyed and reached actually have received philanthropic funding. And in part, that was because a number of people were not applying for support, and very few people actually had familiarity with many of the large education foundations that exist that are providing that capital to help people get their ideas off the ground.
Interesting. Is that the, I wouldn't say responsibility, but is it one of the components of a school to make people aware that this is available?
Yeah, you know, I think there's certainly a role for schools to play, but, you know, when I think about philanthropic organizations, I would almost say it's more their role. Like, at the end of the day, many of us are privileged with a role where we are, our focus is to give money to people who are creating strong ideas that we think are going to have benefit for students across the country when it comes to education. And so when you think about that, your job is to give money away, right? It's almost like the onus is on us to kind of figure out, like, how do we reach people with the strongest ideas?
I know. But it does spark anybody's aggression when they know that support is there. Then they say, "Oh my God, there's a path. I got to start thinking along that path because it's actually possible for me to do this."
Absolutely.
So yeah, that's cool. But yeah, I get it. Give me some examples of some successful Latino entrepreneurs.
Sure, I'd be happy to. So we profiled in our report a couple of different organizations. And so I know you're based in Boston. Mm-hmm. And so one great example that we have in our portfolio right now is Amanda Fernandez. And she leads an organization called Latinos for Education. Mm-hmm. And what she is focused on is she's trying to figure out, how do you get more Latinos serving on school boards across the city in Boston? And she recently expanded the work to Houston. Mm-hmm. And so she's partnering with a number of schools locally to help them figure out, like, kind of what's the leadership and talent they need, mm-hmm. so that they can get the right board members that might fit their overall vision and mission. She's also working to provide professional development to help Latinos who might be working in education today get into more senior roles within their respective organizations. Right. And so that's one example. You know, she comes from a Cuban American family who immigrated to the country, mm-hmm. and, you know, for her, so much of what drives her is that connection to kind of opportunity and the striving that she saw within her own family as she was growing up. And so it's really exciting to see some of the work that she's doing in Boston today.
Very cool. So how does someone who's listening to this actually get more information about it so they can take advantage of it?
Absolutely. So easiest way is to go to our website. It's www.newschools.org. There you can see a link to our report. It'll be on our main page. And the other thing that I would encourage people to do is that we have open funding opportunities all the time where people can apply to get support if they're starting a new school, if they have an ed tech idea, if they're building a leadership development program. And so highly encourage people to learn more about the grant support that we are providing as well.
Okay, one more time, that website.
www.newschools.org.
Cool. Hey, pleasure speaking to you, Frances.
Great speaking with you as well. Thanks for the
take
time.
Take care. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Tamika James joins us now. Where are you, Tamika?
I am in New Jersey.
Ooh. I understand that there's quite an interesting trade show going on there.
Oh, yeah. It's happening this weekend.
Yeah, this is the Extensions Expo. And this is interesting. This is... explain what you're seeing there. I mean, there are tons of people walking around. What are they doing?
They are actually attending an event that is going to change their life. Every attendee gets to mingle with the other audience members. They get to learn. They get to learn the latest weaving techniques and hair replacement methods under one roof. So there's over 50 classes that are offered every day. Mm-hmm. So they're either taking a class, they're going to meet a new vendor, or they're making a connection with another attendee.
This is actually a very creative event, too. I mean, when you're talking about extensions and beauty and that kind of thing, we're talking about being creative.
Yes, absolutely. At this event, they're going to learn how to create a new look for a client. So they may sew the hair on, they may bond it on with glue, They may use a special, a metal grade adhesive. Mm-hmm. They may even create custom wigs. They may create custom units that are sewn to the head that stay on for like 2 months or so. So they are going to learn the very creative side of the beauty world, and they're changing the looks of their clients instantly. They're also supporting women who have different illnesses such as cancer, leukemia, yeah, and different things like that, who's lost their hair.
Yeah, that's it's for both beauty and for necessity and self-confidence and such, for I guess you would call psychological reasons and for physical reasons. Is the expo tailored toward professionals, or is the general public there as well, who may be interested in a different kind of look?
Yes, so we are marketing to the professionals because it is an educational show. Mm-hmm. But there are other components that a layperson would be able to attend for. Mm-hmm. We have people who want to come in and just get their hair done so they can be a model. We have something called Give a Wig. Mm-hmm. So we have attendees that either are single moms or cancer survivors. Mm-hmm. So we support them in getting the hair done for free. Mm-hmm. We also have this thing called the Hair Reveal Panel, where people who are looking to just find something new to do, which is selling hair, they can meet the vendors and factory owners that have factories in other countries. Mm-hmm. And they are able to sit on, watch them at a, on a panel, and they get to answer questions. They get to have questions answered, rather.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You know what I find fascinating?
Oh, they also watch competitions.
Oh, there's competition too. So, that's kind of fun.
Yes. They All see right. a competition called Speed Weave, yeah, where the weave has to be done in 1 hour.
Yeah.
So the competitors don't even know what style they're going to do. So they receive a photo on the spot. Our mm-hmm. sponsors, who's Outre, they actually give us the hair. Mm-hmm. And the competitors just go straight in and complete the weave in an hour. And we also do things to the competitors while they're competing. We may blindfold them or remove an item that they need to use. So it's very fun to watch.
Okay. This is a display also for vendors, I would assume, who sell hair products.
Yes, we have lots of hair vendors as product vendors, people who are carrying makeup and apparel and different things. So there are quite a few different vendors.
You got a little bit of everything going on there.
Oh, yeah.
it's an event. You've created an event here, and she's just the creator of this expo. How many years has this been going on?
This is our 10th year anniversary.
Hey, happy anniversary. I would pop out of
Thank
a cake,
so
but
much.
I don't think you want me to do that. I really don't, Tamika. You know what's interesting, I was going to say, is when you're walking down the street and you're looking at people, you kind of don't realize that a lot of them have hair extensions, and it's so undetectable that you wouldn't even think of questioning it. It's kind of amazing, because it used to be the other way around, where it was kind of obvious.
Yes, and that is if it's done properly, which is why we have this event. Mm. This show gives the professional all of the information to be able to attach the hair extensions or weaves or wigs, and then it gives them even more information on how to make sure it looks natural by cutting it properly, by making sure they add the right amount of hair in, by coloring it to make it look very natural. So there are so many components that go into creating a very natural look that they need to know.
It's a growing industry, and it never seems to stop. What would you say to somebody who is thinking of a career in that field?
I would say this is a very lucrative field. Mm-hmm. It is also very fun. Mm-hmm. A person who is very creative will have a blast being a part of this industry.
Mm-hmm.
And being a cosmetologist allows us to do so many different things. So I just implore a person to consider it, go get your license, and become a real professional, and make it happen, because it's a beautiful industry to be a part of.
Certainly a call for it. There's no question about that. How would someone get more information about future expos or any information that can be imparted to them?
one would visit extensionsexpo.com. Mm-hmm. That's spelled extensionsexpo.com.
Perfect.
They could also visit our social media avenues, which would be Extensions Expo on Instagram, as well as Extensions Expo on Facebook.
Crazy. Tamika James is who she is. Thanks so much for your time. Really interesting stuff.
Thank you so much for having me.
And congratulations on number 10.
Thanks again.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Hey, Ron. This is Laura.
Hi, Laura. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm not so bad so far. This is good. Laura Adams joins us. She's a personal finance expert. Oh, I needed one of those. Thanks for showing up here. This is good.
Oh, my pleasure.
Okay. We're talking about insurance benefits in the upcoming year and how we get through open enrollment and how you make the most of your employee benefits. The open enrollment, how does that work? Does this happen same time every year, or is it any time?
Yeah, it is typically in the fall, and every employer can choose a little bit of a different employment, or rather an open enrollment time, but typically it starts in September. So between now and the end of the year, most workers are going to have to make some pretty important decisions regarding their benefits. So there's a variety of ways that they may get that information. Employee benefits company Unum found that about 30% want to see printed materials. There are also online and internet options, and some people say they want to talk to an in-person advisor. So with four different generations of workers out there, you know, I think the key for employers is to have a variety of options for those employers, for the employees, rather, to get that information they need.
So nothing's universal about this. In other words, from company to company, various plans are made known, but it's not the same all over the place.
That's right. So each employer gets to choose their menu of benefits that they're going to offer each season.
Why would an employer not choose those benefits which cost them the less to administer and to participate in?
Yeah, I mean, certainly they have to factor that into their, you know, their profitability and their business plan. But we know that workers want these benefits, and certainly, you know, it makes them more competitive if you've got a lot of options out there that are affordable.
It's would an employee feel a little odd or uncomfortable about sitting down with their company and saying, I want to know everything I can about this? Does it make them sound a little bit like, I'm trying to get something out of you kind of feeling? I mean, I know some companies have HR, human resources departments. That's what they're there for. But other companies don't. And you have to talk to just somebody in the company who's taking care of that. Should you feel, you know, does that enter into it at all?
I don't think employees should feel intimidated at all, and yeah, I get that they might, you know, feel a little, you know, a little strange about asking about these details, but you know, it's complex. Even people who are in this industry and do it for a living can have a hard time keeping up with all of the changes and options that are out there. So my advice is definitely go straight to your benefits administrator if you have any questions. Don't be afraid to ask for help. These are big decisions, and you need to make them with confidence.
Do these, when you go to a company, they give you information? Does the employee have the ability to call these individual insurance factions and research on their own as soon as they know what is becoming available to them?
In some cases, you know, and in some cases, you may have an in-person advisor who's a representative who might be there on site, or you may be able to reach them by phone. Most companies do have representatives. So, yeah, that's definitely another option to call them directly.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of things to consider. How much of a deductible can you afford? Do you want? Are you more into one area of coverage because you have a certain concern? I mean, there are various options, and every company should give a good number of options, right?
Absolutely. We know that the health deductible health plans are becoming a lot more popular. Unum has found that 50% of employees will make that selection for 2020. These are kind of interesting because you're going to pay more out of pocket for your medical costs, but your premiums are lower, so that's why they're quite attractive. You can also pair them with a health savings account or HSA to further bring down the cost of your health care. So in a lot of cases, these are going to be good choices if you're in relatively good health. Millennials and Gen Z, the younger workers, are using these and electing them at higher rates. But you'll also see the traditional PPO, HMO as well.
Which can limit which doctors you see and how you receive the benefits, et cetera. And, of course, it's not just for you necessarily. This is family coverage as well, isn't it? In many
That's
cases.
That's right.
In many cases, yeah.
That's right, yes. So you have to take your whole family's health situation and needs into account.
It's not an easy thing to navigate, but it's like the major benefit that you do get from a company beyond getting paid. this is a major deal here. So if someone does have questions, there should be somebody at the company that can answer them. Me, I'm always skeptical. I always need a second opinion. So what do I do?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's a good idea to talk to a spouse or a partner, when you're making these selections. As you mentioned, it's a family decision.
Yeah.
Also think about other types of coverage that are available as financial protection. So, keep in mind, half of American households have less than $1,000 in the bank.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're talking about high deductible plans and having out-of-pocket costs, you may need other protections to make sure that you can afford all of these, medical costs that could occur. So accident insurance, hospital insurance, those are two policies that you probably want to take a look at. They're going to pay benefits directly to you if you've got an urgent care situation. You know, you have to go to the emergency room or you need follow-up care or need to stay in the hospital. That's going to really make sure that you've got financial protection to pay those. Disability is another, I think, kind of often overlooked policy. One in four 20-year-olds in the workplace will suffer a disability before they reach retirement. That's a pretty shocking statistic. So disability is there to replace a portion of your income if you can't work due to a covered accident or injury. So definitely weigh the benefits of other types of voluntary benefits in addition to your health insurance options.
Well, where would I go for questions? Because I may have some.
Yeah, absolutely. Take a look at unum.com/workwell. That's unum.com/workwell. They've got a enrollment guide. This is a PDF document that you can download. It's going to cover all of the different types of benefits that we've been discussing in much more detail.
All right. That's what I was looking for there because that's where I need the help. unum.com/workwell. Hey, Laura Adams, thank you so much for your expertise here because we're going to need that. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Take care. Author Norman Bacall joins us. He is a very interesting author. Actually, I read his other books, Breakdown, which was fascinating. I didn't know if I was reading a novel or a nonfiction. Turns out it was nonfiction. that was a pretty interesting piece. Your background is of the legal ilk, I understand.
Yes, I'm a lawyer by training, actually a tax lawyer, and I know immediately when people hear tax lawyer, they assume geek is coming. But I've done a number of interesting things in my career. So I've never expected I'd be financing motion pictures and television shows. Did a lot of work with some of the Hollywood studios, built and ran a law firm for a number of years, and then watched it sadly collapse. Which is, from anybody's perspective, losing something that you've spent your entire life building. Requires some resiliency to bounce back. So, hence my writing career.
There you go. Which is really getting more people involved in what's going on in your head, which is a good thing, you know. Norman is the author of a new book, Odell's Fall, which is kind of a Shakespearean thing, in a sense, kind of taking from a Shakespearean genre.
Well, I took the cast of Othello, which is a story of a black general in Italy, and I reset them in modern day Manhattan, and I took Odell and turned him into a lawyer.
Well, who wouldn't?
I know something about it.
Yeah, who wouldn't? Okay.
Which makes them hard to like, but
now. Yeah, fascinating, and just like your nonfiction, I mean, I wasn't sure what I was reading at a point, because everything kind of turns like, okay, that's happening, but I guess it's not, but everything starts to, these days, at least politically, everything starts to sound feasible, so.
Well, that's it. I mean, there's no such thing as fiction anymore. You just have to turn on the television.
Exactly, yeah, no kidding, okay. This is an interesting, for those people that like twists and turns and that kind of thing, personified, this book's got that.
Yeah, well, it's a story of love and jealousy and deceit.
Yeah.
It's a story about a lawyer who will do anything to get ahead. And, and in some respects, I think we've all kind of been in that position.
Yeah.
And, where we want that job promotion so badly, we think we're prepared to do almost anything.
Yeah.
And I ask the question, what happens when you do?
Yeah. Do you, is this about selling your soul?
In I think only in some respect, because there are really a few stories going on. One of them is, you know, how far are you prepared to go to get ahead?
Yeah.
And what will you do? And what kind of, you know, sociopathic personality do you need to have to really not care who gets hurt on the way?
There you have it. Which
is kind of American politics these days. And so there's the common bond.
Yeah.
But it's also a story about love and, you know, learning that you have to love yourself before you can really love anybody else.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot rolled into this. It's kind of a morality kind of thing without being in your face about it.
Yeah, and I try to touch those issues as well as, you know, we add some racial tension right at the beginning of the book, which is sort of the driver of everything that's going to happen later on, which makes it both ancient and completely contemporary America.
Yeah. The characters that are in the book come from, of course, a Shakespearean work, but it also seems like they maybe if they went to Ancestry.com, they'd find Othello was connected. But other than that, they kind of take on their own deals here and way out of that realm.
Well, the wonderful thing about Shakespeare is he gives you pretty much no backstory on any of your characters.
Yeah, true.
So, which gave me complete license to reset them all as Americans with completely different life stories, and because there's no guidance to go from. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what makes the character, the key writing question I had right along, for example, is what woman would marry Jackson, who's the villain of the book?
Yeah.
What kind of woman would want to be married to that person?
Interesting.
And that was a fascinating question. She ultimately became the easiest character to write.
Yeah. You know, as you know more than anybody, some of the most gripping books of our time have involved legal cases, not only real, but also fictional. There's something that draws the public into these legal battles and these legal plays back and forth, because indeed, it's a huge game. You have to play by the rules, and it really sets up very interesting types of scenarios. So these legal thrillers, like, really work.
And they're fun to write. And my perspective, which I think is a little different than most lawyers who turn around and write books, is I spent my career in the boardroom. And therefore, I'm able to bring the reader in and see what the middle of one of these huge business transactions actually looks like from the inside. And more important, who the characters are. And the one thing you discover is that they're as human and crazy as the rest of us.
Yeah, true. out of interest, I'm always interested in interviewing authors because they're different people. They have a way of expressing themselves to the masses that others don't. I know you do public speaking as well.
Yeah.
But to do it through characters is kind of that's the real talent. That's a whole different expression that goes beyond. Do you sit at a certain spot every day when you write, or I mean, how does
I walk into my study and I sit down at the computer, and some days all I see is a blank screen.
Yeah,
and I just start throwing things. I just start throwing words on the page, and you know, if it's a good day, 20 minutes in, usually my best days are the days that I really have to force myself to get going, and then 20 minutes in, the characters take over, and it's not me anymore. It's I'm just the observer and the scribe. And if I can get to that spot in my head, that is a great day.
I guess it's kind of like meditation, where you sit there, and if you just kind of let your mind go, things start happening. Interesting.
Absolutely. And my favorite moment is when I look down at the page, and even right up to the final draft of Odell's Fall, when I was just making some final touches, I looked down at the screen and I said, I had no idea, because one of the characters reveals a secret to another. And I had no idea that she was holding that secret in for 30 years.
It's a lot of authors create something, and then they do a whole series based on the characters they've created, because they have come to life so much. It's like they're not finished yet. Do you have that situation as well, or when it's done, it's done?
Well, the next book's already written. It's just sitting. It needs a tiny bit of polishing. It's a modern day Hamlet. Set as a prequel to Odell's Fall. So, you'll see the early years of the detectives, and even Odell, who's the hero of this
book,
you get to see what he was like 10 years ago.
So there was a carryover where the character said, no, I'm not done yet.
Exactly. And there will be a third and a fourth coming. For sure.
Wow.
Already in my head.
Oh, boy. Wow. Odell's Fall is the name of the book. It's available everywhere. You're in Canada, I understand.
I'm in Canada. You can pick it up on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm offering 3 free chapters on my website, normanbacall.com, and it's BACAL, or Google me to find me either way. Or I think Amazon will actually let you read a few chapters, and I challenge any reader, read the first paragraph and then try to stop reading it.
Ooh. And the
Kindle version is only $4.99, cheaper than a Big Mac meal. And much fewer calories.
And you don't throw up later.
I'm not going there.
There you go. You don't have to. Okay, it's Odell's Fall, O-D-E-L-L, apostrophe S, Fall. And he's Norman Bacall, B-A-C-A-L. Google him and you'll find all the stuff you want to know about him. Hey, great speaking to you. This has been fun. And congratulations and future success.
Thanks, Ron. I really appreciate it.
Great.
Have a great day.
Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Well, there you have it. This has been an interview special. Next time around, we'll do a regular program. So please take care of yourselves. Until then, I wish you peace.